First up, what Doug does, because he does something different than like your pest control people, and so we're going to talk about what it is that he does, and then what these bees and wasps, what do they actually do? We'll learn all the details about all of this, and then what to do about them, and we've got some ways that you can actually get help for free. Yeah. So we're going to talk about all of that stuff. So stay with us. We're here until noon, and it's all about bees and wasps and everything we need to know. So stay with us. Fleas are next. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World has been brought to you by Canada Pet Foods. Superior quality in every bag and can.
You're listening to Martha Norwalk's Animal World right here on your alternative talk station, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle.
Hi, this is Martha with another Animal World tip. With the warmer weather coming, something I'm sure we'd all rather not think about, fleas. But if you want to keep fleas off your animal friends and out of your house, and if you'd prefer to do that holistically with all natural stuff rather than with toxic chemicals, now is the time to get prepared and start paying attention. The good news is, it's not difficult or majorly time-consuming to keep your animals and living environment flea-free, naturally. But you do need to know what you're doing, and there are four steps involved for complete success. Step one is preventative and involves making your dog or cat friend unattractive to fleas. Fleas are not attracted to healthy animals. They like animals that are unhealthy and physically out of balance, and one of the most important factors keeping your animals healthy is what you feed them. I recommend you start by feeding the highest quality, all-natural diet you can. This can consist of processed, dry and or canned, dehydrated, home-cooked, raw, or a combination of several of these types of food. Whatever you choose to feed, I suggest you add the Missing Link supplement to provide what's missing in the foods themselves, especially the omega-3 and 6 oils, essential for healthy skin. For critical flea months, say May through October or November, you can add a supplement to your dog or cat's food to help repel fleas. Bodyguard, a yeast and sulfur formula, and Ventline, yeast and garlic, are two products that I have found to be successful. Some animals may require additional supplementation to be healthy, like antioxidants, probiotics, or digestive enzymes. A good holistic veterinarian can help you get this right. The better you feed your animal friends, the healthier and less attractive to fleas they're going to be. Step two is to get rid of fleas on your animals and then keep them off. At this time of year, unless your situation is an unusual exception, you have no fleas on your animals yet. So right now, this step is all about paying attention and prevention, so the fleas don't get a jump on you and get established in your home and yard. If you allow your animals to leave your environment or take them off your property, especially if it's to a potential flea area, like a dog park, it's a good idea to spritz them with a natural herbal flea repellent spray. My favorites are products made with erigeron, also known as fleabane or neem. You can get these products from holistic vets or naturally inclined pet stores. I spritz Annie Golden Retriever before we go to a questionable area and sometimes again before we come home. During flea season, which begins any time now, it's a good idea to do your regular flea checks on all your animals. Running a flea comb through your dog or cat's fur is one way to check. Comb down the middle of their back, be sure to comb around the base of their tail and also around their neck and chin. Another way is to roll them over and check their bellies, watching for fleas. For dogs with heavy coats, too thick for a flea comb, have them stand up, facing the same direction you are. Stand over them, and starting at the base of the tail, run your thumbs backwards through the fur, up the back to the neck, looking for running fleas or flea dirt. Flea dirt is tiny black specks made of dried blood. If you suspect you found some flea dirt, crush it on a wet paper towel. If it turns red, it's flea dirt. Time for a thorough flea combing. Remember to have a bowl of soapy water ready to dump any fleas you find into. Repeat this once or preferably twice a day until the fleas are gone. You might prefer to bathe your animal friend to kill fleas instead of combing. No need to use flea shampoo with insecticide. Any mild shampoo will kill fleas if you leave the lather on the animal for 2 to 3 minutes. Be sure to supervise and do not allow your animal friend to lick any of the shampoo. Step 3 is to get rid of fleas in your house and keep them out. If by chance you're an exception to have fleas in your house now or in the future, my first choice to get rid of them is Fleago, a safe powder you sprinkle on floors and fabric that dehydrates the fleas. It's available at any good pet store. If you do not have any fleas in your house now, just follow the rest of my 4-step flea program and you won't get any. Step 4 is to get rid of fleas in your yard, and this is probably the most important step of all. Keeping your outdoor environment free of fleas is truly the key to keeping fleas out of your house and off your animals. Now, you only need to do this step if you had fleas on your animal friends last year. If you did, then it's critically important to spray your yard with beneficial predatory nematodes. That's beneficial predatory nematodes. They are microscopic living creatures that eat the larvae of fleas. They also do crane flies. They come in suspended animation, so to speak, and come alive when you mix them with water and spray the grassy and dirt areas around your house and yard. Because these nematodes are alive, you must wait to spray until the outdoor temperature is consistently above 50 to 55 degrees. Spray just before a rainfall or in the morning or evening and water them in well. They last about 6 to 8 weeks, and if you've had a serious flea infestation recently, you may need to spray twice the first year. The good news here is that once you get those fleas out of your outdoor environment and you practice step 1 and 2, you won't have to spray the nematodes every year. By the way, you can buy the nematodes at garden supply stores, some pet stores, and feed and grain stores. I know you may be thinking how much easier it is to use what I call the chemical quick fixes, like the liquid spot-on products, pills, or injections. And you absolutely can do that. It's your choice. But it is my opinion that these products can be dangerous to both our animal friends and our environment. And I think if you knew what I know, you wouldn't use them. Okay, so there you have it, Martha's 4-step flea prevention program. And if you need more detailed help or clarification, call me, because Animal World will be right back.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. Best way to pick up the stream. I said that's 2 hours in a row I did that. And go to the Animal World website, which is www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. If you can't listen to the entire show today, or if there's parts you want to listen to again, or if you'd like to share the show with your family and friends, we do archive them now on the Animal World website, MarthaNorwalk.com. There is a link on the homepage, the audio archives. Click it on, and you can listen to the individual hours. Each hour is loaded individually for the show, so there'll be 3 hours for each show that's up there. And already getting some really wonderful feedback about that, so you may want to check the audio archives out. Now, at the same time, please, if you have not gone to the 1150 KKNW website and filled out the annual listener survey, please do it today. It is the last day. And I would consider it a personal favor if you would do that. You'll also be entered in the contest to win a couple nights at the Great Wolf Lodge down south of Olympia. And we'd love an Animal World listener to win it again. We won the first year, but we haven't won the last couple years, so I'd like us to win again. So please go to 1150kknw.com and fill out the listener survey. Also, you can take advantage of the HD radio, $20 off deal if you want to get an HD radio. All right, we are talking bees and wasps, and Kelly Louvier,
yes,
is here, our beekeeper, and Doug Cheney is here, our wasp guy and expert. And in the last hour, we were trying to get through what Doug actually does, and you've talked about the wasps being collected for venom extraction, and then that venom being used to help humans who are allergic be desensitized. And that's kind of what you do. If I would say in most cases someone finds a wasp nest, you know, you got it in the attic or on your eaves, or a few years ago I had them in the side of my house. They started coming in. There were yellow jackets in the house all over the place. And anyway, they were in the wall of the house. But most of the time you call, like, an extermination service, or was it they come and poison them or something?
Or you call in bees, and the call goes to wherever central, whatever it is, Natural Lawn and Garden, or perhaps, wherever. And of course, the beekeepers will pick up the swarms for free, but once they talk to the people, they establish that they are not bees, they're hornets or yellow jackets. And a lot of times, I think that the beekeepers just go ahead and collect a budget extermination fee for the hornets, and the resources lost. So that's sort of the conundrum that I've been dealing with for many years, and I'm not sure how to overcome that.
Well, because what you don't go out and kill the bees.
You mean like honeybees?
Excuse me. Now see, there I'm doing it again.
No, if I get a swarm call, I try and call a beekeeper as fast as possible.
So when we're talking honeybees, Kelly, someone like you will come and collect them.
Yeah.
For free.
For free.
Yes.
Okay, so now does that include any kind of bees you'll come and get, or you just get honeybees?
You know, on the Puget Sound beekeepers, the list that we have, there's a numbering system that different people do different things. So some just specifically do honeybees. Some will collect bumblebees, and there are some people on the list that do also collect yellow jackets and hornets. So it's a mix of us, and we work as a team together. So when we get calls, we try to funnel the call to the correct person, and we get tons of calls about yellow jackets, and then it's, you know, funneling those down to the correct person, like Doug, that can take care of those calls for us. I don't deal with yellow jackets or hornets. So I get people try to convince me all the time that they're honeybees just to get me to take them away.
Yeah, right.
And I say it's not my specialty.
No.
I'm the honeybee girl.
So, Doug, what do you do if I say, you know, I've got one of these?
Well, I'd want to know, you know, is it on a high eave or low eave or 30 feet in the air? You know, sometimes things are not doable. Sometimes they are in attics, and they're going in up the gable, 20 feet in the air, and I found out very early in my career that in a crawl space or in an attic was just not my cup of tea. It's 85, 90 degrees outside, and it's about 150 up in that attic, and you've got your gear on, you're stepping over trusses, not trying to step through a through the ceiling board, and you're in close confines with normally a large nest of yellow jackets, and that's not a... Yeah, it's not where I want to go.
I can relate to that. I'm not where I want to go either.
However, you know, and also wall nests can be problematic, but sometimes they are doable if they're not too high up on a structure. But a lot of times, you know, again, hornets, as we call them out here, the yellow hornet and the ball-faced hornet are the ones that build the aerial paper ball-type nest on an eave. You know, in a tree, in a bush, something like that. On a farm implement, you know, they have a number of different places where they can build a nest, and somebody would call me, I would tell them, Martha, I'm not really, that's one distinction, I'm not an exterminator. I like to think of myself as a collector in that I'm going to come out, and what I actually do is get up there with a vacuum cleaner, and there's sort of a tube in the airflow line that has a filter on one end that the vac is going to pull the hornets into that tube, and then after a while you disconnect, cork it up, drop it into a cooler with dry ice, and flash freeze them right there in the field. That's how the venom has to be preserved if the allergy product is going to be...
So use a vacuum cleaner to suck them out.
That's right.
Okay, and then flash freeze them. So you do collect them, they do die.
Oh, sure, you bet.
But at least they serve a purpose.
Well, it's, you know, certainly I'll be making some money from off of the hornets, but again, the thing is that the resource is being utilized, you know.
So that's how you get compensated. You sell those bees
and
to
the
venom people.
Right. I've had a couple of old Dutch uncles and aunts try to tell me that I should be charging for my service, but the thing is that when it's free, it kind of keeps things light and breezy between myself and the homeowner, you know. I mean, basically, they just have to put up with me, I say that facetiously, for an hour or so, and the price is right. But, you know, they told me once upon a time, you know, I've been told that I should be charging just because, you know, I'm helping them out, but my worst nightmare is for some old-timer just to say, the heck, I'll go get a can of spray for $5. You know, even if I said, I'll charge you $20, you know, they'd say, I'll go get a can of spray for $5, and I don't want to go there, you know.
All right, okay. So we want to encourage, you know, everybody that's listening, we want you to know about Doug, because you can, you know, the exterminators, you know, are people that just come out and kill them. They just kill them.
And charge you $100 and $150.
Yeah, they charge you for that service to come and kill
them. That's not to say that they aren't needed. You know,
right.
Again, there's instances where, you know, again, I'll call a spade as fast as anybody else. You know, sometimes these nests are right over your front door, or the other day these people out in Olalla, that's south of Port Orchard there, had a huge nest on their house, which I just, you know, I worked that one. And then they also had possibly a secondary nest that was inside this horse manger. And there was the mare with the, you know, four-month-old colt or whatever it was, you know. And there was a hornet. That, in fact, the one that I brought in today was that nest, about the size of a large, large cantaloupe. On the interior wall, again, you know, mangers have open bays and windows and everything, and the hornets are right there with the horses, and not a good cocktail, horses and hornets to put together. So
yeah, no. But so even when there's a nest, one, like you said, larger than a cantaloupe.
Sure.
Now, do you still suck them into a vacuum, or do you take the whole nest?
Well, normally I don't remove the nest. A lot of times, after talking to the homeowners, again, there's a lot of myth and misconception about these critters out there. And one of the biggest ones is that that nest is going to keep growing in perpetuity for many years. And in other words, it's the size of a basketball this year, it'll be the size of a beach ball next year, and who knows, it might get to be the size of a hot air balloon someday. But, you know, but
that's not true.
No, it is not true. There are places on the planet in a more temperate climate. Let's say Hawaii, New Zealand, Southern California, maybe southern part of the states, where you do get the social wasp, i.e. hornets and yellow jackets, going perennial. But up here, that is, I've had a few people try to tell me about that over the years, but I've never seen it with my own eyes. I have read one scientific paper that they did find one in a ditch bank over by Prosser once upon a time that had, you know, that was, you know, like 80,000 wasp and three functioning queens and all that, you know.
Wow.
And of course, you know, the scientists had to kill it to study it, which I'm not sure I'm comfortable with. But
right, yeah.
But up here, they're basically an annual.
So, which means
they're only going to be there for one season.
They die off.
Exactly.
At the end of the season. And they do not return to the same nest?
No, no. The only thing that is going to survive out of the colony are the new reproductive queens for next year. There just becomes a point in time in the development of the colony that the foundress queen, the drones, and the workers become, and the nest becomes, let's say, call it expendable units. We don't need them anymore.
Hmm.
What they're trying to do in that colony, it's building and they're busy and they're buzzing and everything. What they're trying to do basically is get the new reproductive queens with the drones to get that spermatozoa transfer. Once that window starts opening, another window starts closing, so to speak, because, you know, that's what their mission is that's what all the building is for, is, and, you know, that equals survival to them as a species.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it sounds like, to a certain extent, bees and wasps live, the social ones,
exactly.
Live
similar
life.
Some bees are very similar. Bumblebees are like, the biology of bumblebees is exactly the same as the yellow jackets. The only thing that's going to survive out of the colony are the reproductives. Do not use the nest again. Ever again, and again, those reproductives, whether they're bumblebees or yellow jackets, are going to eventually evacuate the nest at the end of season before heavy winter and go find a place to hibernate over the winter time. The requirement is cold and dry, and they love wood piles, you know, and you may have remember, or some of your listeners may have heard the stories, you know, that in the dead of winter you brought in some wood and all of a sudden you find a rather large yellow jacket up at your window, acting perhaps a little drunk or crawling around,
yeah,
you know, and you wonder,
yeah,
where did that come from? Well, that was a sleeping queen.
Uh-huh.
So.
Now, when I was out, I had a farm out in the Monroe-Salton area, and I remember in the late springtime seeing yellow jackets come out of the ground. And I thought it was like queen. Do they bury themselves and hibernate?
Well, again, there's lots of things out there that are black and yellow.
Yeah?
And another thing is there are a number of different species in our area in the Puget Sound region. There's like over 20 species of bumblebees, and a lot of them are black and yellow, some with more black, some with less yellow, and some with a little orange patches on them.
Well, we now know that there are red-bottom bumblebees, because I had an experience with them recently.
You're right.
Red tails.
There you go. To see something coming out of the ground like that, I'd have to have seen it to tell you what it was. But normally, yellow jackets, ground nesting yellow jackets, or as the scientists say, subterranean yellow jackets, which are going to be inside of something, versus your yellow jackets / hornets, which are going to build the aerial paper ball nest. Normally, they don't really start to have any numbers until later in the summer. Why that is, I don't know, but I haven't had any calls about those yet, and I doubt that I will for a while.
About the yellow jackets?
Yellow jackets that would be inside of something, a log, tree stump, in a rockery.
Oh, those, okay, they take longer to develop.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. But then, Kelly, honeybees, I kind of always thought that all bees just died off in the winter, but honeybees don't.
Honeybees in our area do not. They don't hibernate, but, you know, if it's under 55 degrees, they're not really going outside. So in the winter, when it's cold like that, they're inside of their hive or in a tree or wherever their home is, and they're clustered. Like I was telling you earlier, before the show started, like the movie March of the Penguins, where the penguins work together as a group to keep warmth, and they trade, the ones on the outside move towards the inside, And then as they get nice and warm and toasty, they move back out to relieve the ones on the outside getting all...
Yeah, that was fascinating, that March of the Penguins movie. Remember that, Gary? The big group of them and how they would move in and out. So bees do the same thing.
So honeybees do that. They cluster as a group. And when it's colder, the cluster is tighter. When it's warmer outside, then it's looser. But the queen is always at the center. And there's kind of this quasi-space that's hollow that she can crawl around and move around, and they can take care of her. But her duties, she reduces her egg laying or stops completely when it gets really cold. And so that's where the honey comes into play, is all this honey that we get to enjoy and eat, is they are collecting that when there are flowers outside to get them through the winter when there are no flowers or no blossoms and they're unable to work. That's what they live off of in the winter. And so
that's why they make so much honey.
So they move through their colony and go on to the honeycomb where there's honey and eat and keep it warm. But the inside is always about 96 to 98 degrees, always, no matter when it is. If it's December or if it's June. And then the outside in the winter, the coldest that they can go on the outside is 45 degrees. So they stay alive in the winter, and they do not hibernate. They're active, but they're cold-blooded insects. So they're definitely affected by the weather.
Well, that's amazing. And so, Doug, if you can get access to the wasps, then you will collect them
I will tell the people what I do, and that usually if the getting is good, and most of the time it is, I figure 2/3 to 3/4 of them, possibly even more, going down the road with me. There still is a little activity, and the nest remains. But again, talking with people, you know, Martha, a lot of time these things are 20 feet up in the gable, you know, and if people take binoculars, for instance, and watch them when they're coming and going. They're flying out into the wild blue yonder someplace, and they come in from out there. They don't come out of the nest and just drop right down to the immediate vicinity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I think if that was the case, you know, they'd get everything picked up around there real close, you know, and then they'd have to be branched moving further out. But
well, we know, like with bees, honeybees, when they leave the hive, they're going off to collect pollen somewhere.
Exactly.
When wasps, well, you know, hornets or the yellow jackets, when they leave the nest, what are they going off to do?
Well, that's kind of a two-part answer there. I think that one way to put it is that it sort of depends on the elevation and the location. In other words, what you're going to find around the Puget Sound region with all this huge, huge amounts of green belts and canopy and moisture that provides an extremely great environment for the lower life forms, small flying insects. The scientists call them arthropods. The wasps get imprinted on going out and catching them.
So they're insect eaters.
Well, in a sense, yes. We'll get to that. But
okay.
They're actually more of collectors, hunter-gatherers, than they are eaters of insects.
Oh.
Although they can chew it and take fluids from whatever they're catching, and then come back. There's a symbiotic relationship. The worker wasp actually cannot necessarily assimilate what they're getting. I mean, they can, but that's not truly what sustains them. What they actually do are coming back to the hive and giving that or exchanging liquids with what the scientists call the food processing component of the colony, which are the larvae that grew from the egg the queen laid in the cell.
Oh.
And then the larvae, in turn, in an ideal wasp world, is going to give that worker a drop of liquid. That's actually what they eat.
Huh. Well, like we all know, if you're having a picnic, that the yellow jackets show up.
Picnic where?
Well, outside.
I know, but here or Eastern Washington?
No, here.
Okay. Okay, how many? How many, though, would you say?
The yellow
jackets
show up.
5, 2, 3, 4.
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on where you are and
how good
eating.
Of a cook you are, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I always, well, the way I always handled that, because, you know, see, I talk to animals and insects
gone,
and that kind
right,
of stuff.
Yeah.
And so before I had a big, I used to do this over at Bridal Trails area where I would have big parties. Before everybody ever got there, I would take some raw meat out somewhere away from the gathering, and I'd put it there, and I'd say, all right, you know, guys, this is for you. You can eat all of this. Stay away from us. And most of the time, that would work. They'd leave us alone, and they'd eat that meat. But I
and you'd have just a very few, possibly, that came past your... What I'm getting at is that most of the time with picnics or eating out, camping, or whether here, and again, a lot of times that generally later in the summer, again, it's your ground nesters are the ones that can be bothersome at that time. It's not the aerial nesting yellowjackets necessarily, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Although in other areas, higher elevations, more arid on east of the mountains, the thing is, I'm not sure that there's very many people that have seen 2,000 yellow jackets at one time or 3,000 yellow jackets at one time. And you don't want to see that many.
No, I do, but not anybody. Yeah, no.
But the thing is that, again, ground nesting yellow jackets versus your aerial nesting yellow jackets / hornets can be so many, many more. You know, this nest that I brought in, you know, a little larger than a big cantaloupe, 250, 300
wasps
thereabouts, okay. You know, without really counting them. And a large aerial paper ball type nest, a big one, 700, 800, maybe 1,000, just depending.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Ground nesting yellow jackets can be a lot more, 2,000, 3,000, maybe 4,000.
Wow.
So what I'm saying, what I'm getting at is that so if you have 3, 4, 5 yellow jackets hanging around when you're trying to do something outside, again, I know that may be an awfully lot to people, but in the big picture, it's just absolutely nothing. You know, my question has always been, what is the rest of the outfit doing? You know, they're out doing their other thing, collecting
right,
their little bugs.
When I'd sit, if I have, you know, sitting outside eating, you know, something, and a yellow jacket shows up, anymore, I'm interested in observing and also watch them. But right. They'll get on the meat, and they actually start eating it. So what are they actually doing?
They're not actually eating. Well, again, you know, sometimes people will tell me, oh, yeah, they're heavy meat eaters, you know. And, again, it's just like, you know, they have such a huge stomach, and they're really going
right,
for it.
Right, we're told hang a piece of meat over liquid, and they'll eat enough of it, they'll get heavy, they'll fall in and drown. What's the deal?
That can work some places, and I'm not downplaying that, but... To give you a quick example, very early in my career, there was a fellow in Ballard that on the side of his house, the boards had a opening, a seam that ran about 10 feet long. The yellow jackets were piling out of there, flying out in the wild blue yonder. And, you know, he had set up three cauldrons on tripods with hooks, and he had some fish or liver or whatever. You know, I mean, he really was trying to do it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And... You know, there was a very, you know, five or two or whatever in each one, just nothing. He also had one of those yellow jacket traps in a tree, and, you know, there was four or five in there, and there was, I think, most of those were another species. It wasn't what was coming out of the wall there, you know, so I kind of got a negative thing about doing that, although I've heard people hanging the traps off their boats in the San Juans and got to empty them all the time, you know. And, you know, again, east of the mountains, different elevations, you know, again, that might, with the meat and stuff, that might be piling on.
Also, one of the things that bothers me, sometimes the espresso stands, you know, the drive-through espresso stands,
mm-hmm.
and they get a lot of yellow jackets coming, you know, I guess they're attracted to the sweet syrups and stuff, but they put those yellow jacket...
They're basically
traps.
Calling them to that area. They're asking them to come hang out. I mean,
right? But they go into those traps and then they die. And I've never felt good about those because I think they must die a slow, miserable death.
Well, how many? I mean, I think there's some things we need to think about when they come around like that. I want to know how often people get stung. They may be a little bit of a nuisance, but it's like a small child hanging around. They're just hanging around. They're not...
Well, no, what did you say? We've got to take care of our advertisers and sponsors, but what you said it was... Well, what did you tell me?
Well, it's like a police officer. Like, let's take the average police officer. They carry a gun, they, you know, but they're not out just shooting everybody. You know, I mean, rarely do police officers ever fire their gun. And,
so does that make sense?
And,
it's just like they're carrying a gun. They aren't necessarily going to shoot it.
Yeah, they're really going to...
I like that idea.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to take care of our advertisers and sponsors, and then we continue more about bees and wasps. Stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, did you know that even if you feed the highest quality all-natural food to your dog and cat friends, the ingredients in that food is exposed to heat, light, and oxygen that begins to destroy a lot of the important stuff? That's why Designing Health created The Missing Link. Now, they start with human-grade, all-whole natural raw food sources. They've perfected a way to protect it from heat, light, and oxygen. It comes to us in a powdered form in a resealable gold foil pouch. You keep it in the refrigerator once you've opened it, mix up your animal friend's food, add in The Missing Link, a little cool water to mix it up, and voila, you have added what's missing, like the balanced omega-3, 6, and 9 oils, the enzymes in the raw ingredients, the fiber. The Missing Link tends to eliminate excessive shedding problems in dogs, eliminates hairball problems in cats, and there is a Missing Link formula for dogs. There's one for cats. There's a vegetarian formula you can feed to both your dogs and cats, as well as to other critters like house rabbits and guinea pigs, gerbils, that sort of thing. There's a bird formula and a horse formula and a Missing Link Plus with glucosamine for connective tissue and joint support in a dog and horse formula. So I want you to ask for The Missing Link wherever you shop for premium pet supplies, or you can call Designing Health directly. Their number is 800-774-7387. That's 1-800-774-7387, or visit them online, www.designinghealth.com.
Music, the stuff of creation.
What a powerful tool for healing, inspiring, and connecting us to Source.
And to each other. We'll talk about it. We'll play it.
We'll have a lively discussion with guests who are doing it.
So join us Monday and Wednesdays at 7 p.m.
Saturday mornings at 11.
Tune in to Living Music Radio on KKNW 1150 AM or livingmusicradio.com.
Hey, I can't believe that this jewel of a place escaped my radar for so long, and now that I've discovered it, you have to know about it too. It's the Natural Pet Pantry in Old Town Burien. Jackie, the owner, is an extraordinary woman and has been making home-prepared raw food diets as well as home-cooked diets and treats for our dog and cat friends for over 5 years now. You'll also find packaged frozen bones, poultry necks, and vegetables. Even custom-made recipes are available. And they deliver free to your home. The Natural Pet Pantry in Old Town Burien. Give them a call at 206-248-1079 or www.naturalpetpantry.com. Visit them soon, because it just makes sense.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's alternative talk, 1150 AM.
Hey y'all, Martha Norwalk, and we are midway through the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. You can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And I keep thinking over my shoulder, what the heck is buzzing? Well, that's because we're talking bees and wasps, and we have an observation hive in the studio that Kelly brought with her. It is honeybees, and it reminds me a little bit of the ant farm I had when I was a little kid. But they actually buzz pretty loud in there.
Yeah.
Because I can hear it in my head. I mean, with the headphones on and everything, I get in this little low-grade buzz.
They do buzz. I mean, that's who they are.
And I was reading something, you know, with the red-bottom bumblebees, the hive that I rescued recently in the last few weeks. I didn't tell you about it last week, so I thought I'd save it for this week. But unfortunately, there's a reason why they build underground, and that their hives or nests are not safe on the ground. And mine were attacked by something. We think probably a possum or a raccoon during the night was attracted to the honey and the pollen inside and came and kind of trashed the hive. And it was kind of heartbreaking because I had become very fond of my red-bottom bees and they were thriving in my yard. But Mother Nature...
Yeah,
it took its course, and there were adults left the next day that were still kind of wandering around the hive, and I think eventually they just decided to move, which is a good thing. I hope they found a safer place to be, but I'm sad to say that I don't have my bumblebees anymore. But it was a fascinating learning experience, and at any rate, Kelly brought in with her. this observation hive, and it does look like a gigmongous ant farm. And it's a wooden frame. What would you say that that's probably like by 2 feet by 2 feet?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 4 feet wide. And it has the honeycombs inside, and then bees. How many bees would you say is in that observation hive, Kelly?
I'd say maybe 500.
Wow.
It's pretty small. You know,
and that's a small one.
The colonies of honeybees are much larger than wasps and yellow jackets. You know, in the winter, at their bare minimum, they a healthy colony will have maybe 10,000 bees. When I work my bees right about this time and maybe in a month or so, when I open up a colony, I'll be working with 100,000 honeybees.
100,000?
Yeah, 60, 80, 100,000.
In
if it's
one
a big colony? Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, so when I'm working on, I'm working with a lot of them.
Holy mackerel. Now, when you first opened them up and when you brought them in here, because you cover the sides.
Yeah, they have a piece of wood that goes over so they can stay dark in there.
They stay dark. That they were all pretty congealed together in the middle, and now I notice they seem to be more active.
They're more active.
Are they like looking for a way to get out?
They would like to get out. It's hard on them to be inside the observation hive. It's a great tool for education and to teach people about the bees, but it is a strain on them to be stuck inside, and they start to communicate with one another that they can't get out, and that becomes their main focus.
So then everybody's looking for a place to get out?
Yes, and they're also, too, the bees that are, like I talked about, the different jobs, the garbage bees and the different things, little bits, they want to be able to take those out, and they can't do their job. And more than anything with bees, wasps, all these insects, their jobs are very important to them. And if they can't do that function, that's when they get testy or they get upset. And as humans, we, you know, interfere with this, and we believe that we have the right answer, and we think they're just going to sting, like we were talking about earlier mm-hmm. at the picnic. The worst thing you can do with bees, yellow jackets, anything, snakes, anything that has venom, mm-hmm. is swat at it, go at it, push it away. That just aggravates them. You're basically asking that insect to sting you, and it's an ignorant thought, because it's totally incorrect. If you let them be and left them alone, they would mill around, but, you know, it takes kind of like a zen moment just to get into that place where you just be quiet and they kind of go away, you know? I mean, it's not something they're waiting around to sting you.
So what my mother used to tell me is really true, if the bees or wasps come around, is hold still.
Just leave them alone.
Stay calm and...
It's like if you were at a mall and people are walking around you, it's not like you can just shove somebody walking by you. That person would haul off and hit you back. So that's their only defense, you know. And rarely do, even if you swat at them, I want to know how many people actually get stung even doing that. It just frightens them and they get worried. So...
But so they aren't, like, out there looking to sting people?
No.
That's good.
And they serve us a lot of good. Even hornets and yellow jackets, who give the bees a bad rap a lot of the time, because hornets and yellow jackets can sting again and again. Honeybees, who often, I'm often told...
I thought they stung, everybody stung once and...
No, what Doug deals with, the insects he deals with, they can sting again and again.
Really?
That's true.
They can. So a yellow jacket doesn't lose its stinger?
There is a slight barb, but it's not enough to pull it out. They don't lose their stinger, and they can sit there. And again, after all these years and everything, I've actually become, I have the idea that it is a blessing to be stung just once, because it could be so many more times.
Honeybee stings are a lot less painful, and many people believe that they're allergic because they swell up, but that's your body's natural response.
Mm.
The most important thing if you do get stung is to stay calm, take deep breaths, and move slowly, because if you move fast, scream, yell, cry,
it gets it in your system.
It gets your adrenaline going, and it moves it through your whole blood system. If you get stung and use a credit card or a Swiss Army knife or anything like that, and just scrape off the stinger and make sure to get it out, because it has barbs,
mm-hmm.
Then it will stop pumping, because when they sting you, the bee pulls away and the stinger actually pulls out the intestines and all of the insides out of the abdomen of the bee. And that bee will live up to 2 days after that in incredible pain, and then eventually die. And that's what people don't understand, is when they sting you, it means they die. They really do think about it.
Is that the same for bumblebees, too?
Bumblebees, it depends on the strain of them. Some have a stinger that comes out, but a lot of those can also sting again and again.
Sting, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Honeybees are specific to that they can only sting once. And I think if people can understand that, then you'd realize if you hauled off and hit your sister, then it meant you died. You'd probably think about it a little more. So they really do think about it. Usually, if you get stung, it's most commonly by a yellow jacket or a hornet, less likely a honeybee. If it's a honeybee, it's been squashed or something like that. And if you have been stung by a hornet or a yellow jacket, you did something. You were the cause of it. The human was the cause of it, not really the insect. And I think that's important today, if I can get one thing out there, is this information.
Well, a lot of times, especially getting stung by honeybees, when I was a kid, I mean, the most common time that happened is you stepped on them.
Yeah.
You know, because clover and the grass, and they were all over the place. Well, there aren't as many, very few honeybees out there around anymore. I was thinking my grass is covered with clover right now, and I was just thinking about the other evening looking, you know, I don't even have to worry about walking because there's very few bees.
Well,
there's no honeybees. There's a few bumblebees. But
at the beach, too, a lot of times people will get stung at the beach on the sand, and that's another thing that people don't understand is bees, when they're out flying, they aren't just collecting pollen. They're collecting nectar. They're also collecting water to bring back. They need water just like we do.
Oh.
So they have water sites, and that's also a big thing around here in California. Anywhere there's pools, is bees will use their scent to find water. And so they like chlorine because there's a scent in there that they can remember and go back and communicate to the hive that scent. So they say, hey, there's this enormous water center. They're always in there. There's a few people every once in a while, but for the most part, we have it to ourselves. Let's go there every day and get water and collect it and bring it back. Well, the problem is when the family decides to open up the pool or the sauna, you know, whatever, whatever's going on, and use it, and the bees are in there, or the yellow jackets collecting the water, and then they get stung because they get afraid and they try to move them out of the water, and then their natural defense is, hey, you're moving me, you're hurting me, I'm going to sting you, and then they die. So a lot of times at the beaches, when you step on them, their stinger is just going to squish out from the force of being stepped on. So they are sometimes around at beaches, and if you see that, you know,
they're drinking water.
Yeah. So they're collecting water and taking it back to the whole hive.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I want to go back because, Doug, we were talking about the wasps and what they're doing when they're out working. Well, obviously, sometimes they're getting water. But now, did they actually, because I thought that they ate insects and stuff, because I see them in my yard. They're usually flying around plants and crawling on the leaves and underneath and stuff.
Hunting.
They're hunting.
Yeah.
And they're hunting for insect?
Yep.
Now, so what do they do? Like, grab them in their mouth and fly them around? I've never seen them do that. What do they do?
One time, a few years ago, before I was even in this, I was sort of an itinerant gardener, and I was mowing this yard down on the south end, the very south tip of Mercer Island, and there was a little pile of dog dew there, and there was some little gnats or something that was sort of milling around in the fumes or whatever, and here came this big black and white, you know, I would have probably called it a bee back then, but it very skillfully just kind of latched onto one of these little critters. And I don't know that it gave it a sting, but, you know, I thought, man, that's pretty neat, you know, and it just took off. Another time, again, the ball-faced hornets are big, agile wasps. And another time before I got into collecting, I was walking back from the mailbox one day in this kind of a gravel driveway, and all of a sudden there was a ball-faced hornet and a yellow jacket were right down in the dirt, kind of going one-on-one, you know.
They were having a fight?
Something was happening there, and I don't know whether the ball-faced hornet got in a lucky sting or actually its venom was a little more potent than the yellow jacket, but anyway, it ended up hauling that yellow jacket up to this lilac limb, and I was watching there for a while, and all of a sudden I realized that stuff was dropping down, and then I realized it was biting the damn legs off of this thing.
Oh,
and it was sort
wow.
of like, you know, sort of like getting rid of the extraneous material and just getting the goody to take back to the nest or to work with, and it flew off, you know, and I thought, man, that would have been a pretty neat 2 little minute nature thing, but
yeah.
So they're out there trying to find insects, and
they also go. They also do attack my honeybees in the fall, but they are
the yellow jackets.
Yes,
to the honeybees.
Yeah, they'll come to my colonies and they wait outside and they fly out and they get them. But that also
they actually grab the honeybees. When
yeah,
they come
and they
out?
Rip the heads off and then eat the abdomen. But it's also, again, this is nature, and that serves a purpose, because in the fall, the honeybee colonies are cutting back their numbers and reducing their numbers so that they can fit into their hives. And
for the
so really, they're
it's
going after.
It's all good here, you know?
Yeah, this is all Mother Nature.
They're going
and
after
it's all
the
balance.
Yeah, they're going after the older bees to eat those.
All right, we got to take a time out and take care of our advertisers and sponsors. We will come back and do as quick a current events as I can do so we can get back to the bees and wasps. We've got lots to talk about. And in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll open the phone lines as we continue our conversation. In case you have questions or concerns about bees or wasps, you know, the hornets, the yellow jackets, all that stuff, so you can give us a call if you need clarification on something or want information that we haven't covered. So stay with us. Animal World continues. News are right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Canada Pet Foods is committed to providing you and your pets the highest standard of excellence for product quality, palatability, and customer satisfaction. They pride themselves on making only the highest quality, all-natural pet foods using the finest ingredients available. All of their products are made the Canada way, with superior quality in every bag and can, with no corn, wheat, soy, grain fractions, fillers, or byproducts, and they're naturally preserved. Discover for yourself and your pets the benefits of feeding Canada and Felidae all-natural natural pet foods. Go to www.canaday.com for more information.
Hi, this is Chat with Women, and I'm Pam.
And I'm Rochelle.
We're a forum for women and the men who love us, who want to learn, grow, change their lives, and have some fun. Join us now 5 days a week, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. to be inspired, educated, all with fun and love. Be sure to visit our website, chatwithwomen.com.
If you're interested in reaching thousands of women for sponsorship information, email us at info@chatwithwomen.com.
Hey, today's pampered pets deserve a big apology. Pets are fed the same processed foods meal after meal, which they would never eat in the wild. Research continues to prove that the more we consume processed foods, the more health suffers. Over 25 years of Dr. Weisong's research has proven that pets suffer from the same degenerative diseases plaguing their human friends. Pets don't have a choice about what's put in their bowl, and their human caretakers have been led to believe that they're doing the right thing by feeding this way. Learn more at www.weisong.net. Weisong, the thinking person's pet food.
Write it down, shout it loud. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Now, wasn't that fun?
Martha Norwalk, and we're winding down the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World, but you can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. We're talking bees and wasps. We have an observation honeybee hive in the studio. We have an empty yellow jacket wasp nest in a cooler in the studio. But right now, we're going to take a little break from the bees and the wasps, and it is time for current events. Let's see. Speaking of entertainment, what do we got on the list? We got all kinds of stuff coming up here this month and next, and a little bit out into the future beyond that as well. Let's see. Meow's third annual auction fundraiser, Fine Wine and Felines, is Saturday, July 19th at 7 p.m. It is a wine tasting, chocolate tasting, and silent auction. It will be at North Bellevue Community Center. And if you need more details, go to the Meow website, www.meowcatrescue.org. See, the third annual Golf for the Animals benefit for the Feral Cat Spay and Neuter Project is July 26th. That will be at the Golf Club at Echo Falls. Pre-registration is required. And the last day to register is July 18th. You can register online at www.feralcatproject.org, or you can give them a call at 206-528-8125, extension 3. And if you're missing any of this current event stuff, you can always go to the Animal World website. When you get back to your computer, marthanorwalk.com, click on current events and you'll get all of these details. Now, this is the future date I talked about. The Humane Society Annual Walk for the Animals will be October 4th at the University Village, so mark your calendars for that. www.seattlehumane.org if you want more details about that now. Let's see. The Burke Museum exhibit The Last Polar Bear, Facing the Truth of a Warming World, photographs by Stephen Kaslowski's. He is an acclaimed wildlife photographer, and it's 8 years of his work tracking polar bears in the Alaskan Arctic and documenting the changes in their habitat. Is on display until December 31st, and there are a couple of other good wildlife displays going on as well that will be starting this month and next. Let's see. The 10th annual Chihuahua Chihuahua Gathering will be Saturday, July 19th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Skagit County Fairgrounds in Mount Vernon. $6 per person, $15 per family to join this grand affair. And our own Kim Miller, medium and animal intuitive, will be at the Chihuahua Gathering. She'll have a booth and will be doing 15-minute readings. It's $15 per 15 minutes. More information at www.chihuahuarescueandreferral.com. All right. The Colors of Compassion, a fundraising event for the Feral Cat Spay Neuter Project. The grand opening is July 12th. That's from 6 to 9 p.m. Free admission, live music, a little live auction, and some of the proceeds from the art sales go to the cats. The actual show goes from July 12th through August 9th. And let me tell you where that event is. I've got to find the flyer. Let's see. It is in Ballard, and at the Laura Frost Fine Art Gallery in Seattle. So there you go. Let's see. Another charity golf tournament. This is the first annual to benefit the Equine Rescue Association, and it will be at Cedar Crest Golf Course in Marysville on August 24th. So you can golf for the cats in July. You can golf for the horses in August, and it's going to be at a shotgun start at 1 p.m., and you can get more information at ERA, that's Equine Rescue Association, era-horsehaven.org is the website, or you can go to golfdigestplanner.com. So that's all the events on current events. The only other thing I want to tell you about is next week. We will be continuing our Going Green for the Animals feature. Sandy got us started last month with some good green advice, and we will have our crack Animal World reporting team in the studio next week. That would be Terry from Heavenly Spa and Cheryl from the Northwest School of Animal Massage, and they have planned a whole feature on going green for our animals and lots of details. Lots more stuff. We're going to have some interviews, local experts and that sort of thing. So I hope you will join us next week. Of course, we will start off with animals in the news and that sort of thing as well. And then it's more going green. So be here next week. And I guess that wraps up current events for this week. All right. Boy, we're are almost to the end of the hour, but I've got in the studio Kelly Louvier.
Yes.
Is here. She is our beekeeper and has brought us a wonderful observation hive. Very interesting to see the honeybees and all of the honey in there. And then the queen, what would you say? She's probably about twice as big as...
She's longer than that.
And then longer.
Yeah, the bees have three different segments. They have a head, a thorax, and an abdomen. And her abdomen's longer than the worker bees that are female. The queen is also female, but her abdomen's longer because her reproductive organs are functioning, and she needs that long abdomen to... She basically does dips. She uses her front legs and lowers her abdomen down into one of the hexagon cells to lay an egg, and she lays about 2,000 eggs a day.
What?
Yeah.
2,000?
Yep.
A day?
Yeah.
Holy
that's
mackerel.
That's
why you have so many bees in the hive.
Exactly.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. She's pretty beautiful, though.
Yeah, yeah. And I noticed that the regular honeybees in there...
The workers,
The workers have little black stripes around their abdomens, but she doesn't have them on hers.
Yeah, and this one for the...